This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
What I saw was despair, was unimaginable humanitarian needs and fear in so many people's eyes. This is a war that turned previously peaceful Sudanese homes into cemeteries.
That was Dominique Hyde, Director of External Relations for the UN Refugee Agency, who just returned from a visit to Sudan's White Nile state on the humanitarian crisis in the battled country. Details coming up. Also, Ukraine tries to build ties with South Africa, and the families of Israeli held hostage in Gaza push their government for action. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. In Israel, many people marked the start of the conflict with Hamas 30 days ago. More than 1,400 Israelis died when Hamas militants attacked Israeli communities on October the 7th. Since then, more than 10,000 residents of Gaza, including about 4,000 children, have died in the Israeli bombardment of the Hamas-run enclave. Last night, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel will have overall security responsibility in Gaza for an indefinite period after its war with Hamas. He was speaking in an interview with the U.S. television network ABC. Netanyahu also said Israeli is open to what he called little pauses in the fighting to allow the release of more than 240 Israelis and foreign hostages Hamas holds in Gaza. U.S. President Joe Biden yesterday raised the need for humanitarian pauses on a call with Netanyahu. In addition, Biden has advised the Israelis against trying to occupy or control Gaza after the war. Much of the world is calling for an immediate ceasefire and the unimpeded flow of humanitarian aid into Gaza. The United States has stopped short of calling for a ceasefire, with officials saying it could allow Hamas time to regroup and attack Israel again. For more on the situation, we have journalist Linda Gradstein on the line from Jerusalem. Welcome to African News Tonight, Linda.
Thank you.
So start out by briefing us on the latest developments today.
Well, as you said, it is now a month since the war began on October 7th. And in Israel, there were lots of ceremonies, moments of silence, to mark that month, memorial events. One interesting thing, by the way, is that apparently officials in Thailand, the Thai foreign minister, says that he's met with officials in Qatar and Egypt, and that 24 of the hostages who are from Thailand, who are being held in Gaza by Hamas, will be the next to be released. And the other interesting thing was that the Thai officials said they've received proof that all of these captives, who were agricultural workers who were employed in Israeli farms near the Gaza border, who were kidnapped along with hundreds of others, are alive. So that's kind of an interesting development in the hostages. A total of 240 people are being held, and Israel has not had any kind of sign of life from them. So the fact that Thai officials are saying that their hostages are still alive seems to indicate that at least most of the Israeli hostages are also still alive.
So as I mentioned earlier, last night, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel will have overall security responsibility in Gaza for an indefinite period after its war with Hamas. So, Linda, how are Israelis and, Palestinians reacting to Prime Minister Netanyahu's comments that Israel would take security control of Gaza after the fighting ends?
It's not clear exactly what that means. I mean, even before the war, Israel had security control of Gaza because Israel controlled the airspace and controlled the entry and exit into Gaza. So is that what Netanyahu means? I don't think most Israelis want Israel to reoccupy Gaza and the 2.2 million Palestinians who live there. Even before the war started, Gaza was a very poor place. More than a million million of the Palestinians who live there are refugees. More than half of the population are unemployed. So I think what Netanyahu means is just that, Israel will continue to control the airspace and control the entry and exit into Gaza. But who's going to be in control on the ground in Gaza is something that at this point nobody knows.
And much of the world is calling for an immediate ceasefire and an impeded flow of humanitarian aid into Gaza. A few is trickling in through the Rafah border with Egypt. How's the aid trickling in into the Gaza?
So Israel has said that it will not allow aid in through its crossing point called Kerem Shalom. So the aid is coming in through Rafah. The situation is very difficult. Israel has opened a humanitarian corridor from the north of Gaza, where most of the fighting is, to the south. And, for example, today, a lot of Palestinians waving white flags were able to move along that corridor. Now, Israel's been calling for almost a month for Palestinians in northern Gaza to move south. Israel has surrounded Gaza and is sort of poised to enter the tunnel network that is underneath Gaza, the humanitarian situation is growing increasingly desperate. A couple of hospitals say they're on the verge of shutting down, and you have millions of hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who are sort of either taking refuge in United Nations facilities, which really don't have the ability to take care of them, or sort of wandering around the streets. I mean, remember, Hamas was in control of Gaza, and now the Hamas leadership is basically underground. So there's really kind of a chaotic situation in Gaza.
And lastly, Linda, there are growing demands around the world for a ceasefire. Thousands of people have rallied in several countries in recent days. So from where you are, how do Israelis feel about those demands and criticism of how Israel is conducting the fighting?
Well, I think Israelis kind of feel that Israel has to get rid of Hamas at least as a military power and as the people who, were in control of Gaza. I mean, what happened a month ago on October 7th when thousands of Hamas gunmen overran 20 Israeli communities, really murdered people and, children in very brutal ways, took 240 hostages, including babies and toddlers without their parents. I mean, how do these, who's taking care of these babies and toddlers who have been in captivity now for a month? I think that Israelis feel that now is not the time to stop, that Israel has to kind of go all the way against Hamas while trying to minimize the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. But I think Israelis aren't really thinking about what happens after the war ends and who's really going to be in control and how Gaza is going to rebuild.
Journalist Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem, thank you for your input.
Thank you.
The Palestinian militant group Hamas has held about 240 Israelis and citizens of other countries for a month. Now their families are increasing pressure on the Israeli government for their release. At the same time, the families are terrified that a wrong move could endanger their loved ones. VOA's Natasha Mozgovia reports from the protest encampment in Tel Aviv, Israel.
A crowd in Tel Aviv, Israel, rallying in support of the Israelis and others held hostage by Hamas for a month now, chants in Hebrew, Achshav, Achshav, meaning now, now.
Every moment that Inbar and all the other are there, it's risking their life, and all the airstrikes and the ground invasion is really risking their lives, so we cannot wait anymore. We are expecting from our politicians to do everything to bring them home now, to pay any price.
Noam Alon, whose girlfriend Inbar Hyman was kidnapped October 7 from the Supernova Music Festival in South Israel, says that after protesting almost daily for the past month, he is sleeping in a tent in front of the Israel Defense Forces headquarters in Tel Aviv, along with other people whose loved ones were abducted to Gaza. Shir Segal is demanding Israel do something to save her parents, Adrian and Keith Segal, who were abducted from Kibbutz Kfar Aza in southern Israel. She says we are fighting to get them back. We are begging on any platform, anyone with an audience, just to get them back. She says her parents are innocent people who did nothing wrong, old people who need their medications. She can't even imagine where they are or what is being done to them. 4 weeks have passed, with Hamas still holding about 240 hostages in Gaza. Their families decided to ramp up the pressure on the Israeli government to make sure their release is top priority. Families are frustrated not only with the government, but also with the world, which they feel cares mainly about humanitarian access to Gaza civilians. Lisa Shpalansky speaks of her 19-year-old cousin Karina Ariev.
And we saw a video of her being kidnapped by Hamas. She was with two other girls inside a jeep. We saw that she was hurt in the face. And other than that, we don't know anything. Nobody tells us because nobody knows. Hamas doesn't release any information about whether they're fine.
She says the Israeli Defense Forces gives 200% to bring the hostages back, but the world needs to do more.
They're hypocrites when they call us out for trying to get back our families. But if it were their family, wouldn't they move heaven and earth for them?
Israeli artist Hila Galili has built several installations calling attention to the hostages. She says her work reflects the impossible situation of their families. She says hostages' families are in a situation where they cannot talk because of the fear of retaliation against their loved ones. The hostages also can't raise their voices because they're locked up and they're tied up. So she says, I'm standing like this, and sometimes when you are standing silent, the scream is much louder. One of the hostages' relatives told the crowd that humanitarian aid should be cut to Gaza until the Israeli hostages receive aid as well. Others demanded release of the hostages as a condition for a ceasefire. All seem to agree that with the military operation in Gaza, the hostages are in harm's way, and the Israeli government and the rest of the world need to do more to secure their release. Natasha Mozgovaya, VOA News, Tel Aviv, Israel.
South Africa says it will recall all diplomats from Israel for consultation to signal its concern over the situation in Gaza. At a news conference, Foreign Minister Naldi Pandor said the government is extremely concerned over the deaths of children and innocent civilians, adding that Israel's response to the October 7th Hamas attacks has become one of the collective punishment. VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi discussed these developments with David Monda, professor of international relations at City New York University.
My take is clearly showing from the South African government position their backing of the Palestinian cause, which has been a historic position that the ANC government has taken. And this actually escalates the diplomatic initiatives from South Africa, whereas before there was diplomatic notes of protest, but now with this recalling of ambassadors at the ambassadorial level, it really escalates, you know, the diplomatic tension between Pretoria and Tel Aviv. But it also shows that South Africa is willing to punch way above its weight in terms of a developing country in the global south, actually going against Israel backed by major Western countries, including the United States. That South Africa is really looking to protest, but actually to advance this narrative of being the moral voice for the conscience of the African continent towards the situation in Gaza right now.
South African president has pledged his support and solidarity with the people of Palestine, and he said, all of us standing here pledge our solidarity for the people of Palestine. We stand here because we are deeply concerned about the atrocities that are unfolding in the Middle East. Is that position related somehow to South Africa's own history?
It's very much related to South Africa's own history. Nelson Mandela was quoted as linking the plight of the Palestinians under Israeli occupation directly to the plight of South Africans under the apartheid government. And specifically, this idea of the occupied areas of the West Bank, the Golan Heights, East Jerusalem, the Gaza Strip, to the policies of the apartheid government of the Bantustan. So these were so-called African tribal lands, Venda, Sky, which were created by the apartheid government. So there's that very direct linking, not only from the Mandela legacy, but future generations of ANC leadership. So people like Cyril Ramaphosa, the current president, these were all individuals who are in exile, but also individuals who are in exile and got a lot of support from the Palestinians in exile, from the PLO, be it diplomatic support, be it guerrilla support in terms of training for the ANC when they were fighting the apartheid government. So it's very much connected. I do, however, have to add that. So the South African government is advancing a very strong diplomatic narrative. On one hand, its diplomatic rhetoric can sometimes also bring it into conflict with its economic interests. So we cannot forget that the South African economy is also very much reliant on countries like the United States for investment, for capital, for bilateral relations, for trade. So, you know, Pretoria needs to be careful in terms of itself advancing a diplomatic position in support of the Palestinian cause, but also to be careful not to alienate particularly the United States and the United Kingdom on its position as regards to the current conflict in the Middle East.
That was David Monda, Professor of International Relations at City New York University, speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shanawi. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. A senior UN refugee official warns an unimaginable humanitarian crisis is unfolding in Sudan as the world remains silent while millions of people are forcibly displaced from their homes by a brutal conflict. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Dominic Hyde, the UN Refugee Agency's Director of External Relations, has just returned from a visit to Sudan's White Nile state on the border with South Sudan.
What I saw was despair, was unimaginable humanitarian needs and fear in so many people's eyes. This is a war that erupted without warning and turned previously peaceful Sudanese homes into cemeteries.
Since fighting began April 15th between the Sudanese Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, Hyde says 4.5 million people have been displaced inside Sudan. In addition, 1.2 million have fled to neighboring countries, most of them women and children. She says fighting is growing in scope and brutality, though violations of international humanitarian law go on with impunity. She says the world has remained silent.
It is shameful, and it's shameful the atrocities that are committed 20 years ago in Darfur can still be happening again today with such little attention. And the recent fighting in Darfur and the Darfur region has caused even more displacement, with thousands of people struggling to find shelter and many people sleeping under trees by the roadside.
Hyde says there have been accounts of widespread rape and sexual violence in Darfur, Khartoum, and other areas of Sudan. She says the UN is calling for an immediate end to all gender-based violence, including sexual violence, as a tactic of war to terrorize people. She's calling for accountability for these crimes, as well as for medical and psychosocial support for survivors. She appeals to the international community to respond generously and not to look away from the pressing humanitarian needs of millions of Sudanese struggling to survive. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Ukraine's government is working to build up its relationship with South Africa, even though President Cyril Ramaphosa's administration has not condemned Russia's invasion of Ukraine, insisting that it is neutral in the conflict. Darren Taylor reports.
The African National Congress, ANC, government has been criticized for forging closer ties with Moscow since Russia invaded Ukraine in February 2022. As the war raged, South Africa hosted the Russian Navy for joint military exercises and pledged further military cooperation with the Kremlin. The United States has accused the Ramaphosa administration of selling weapons and ammunition to Russia, which Pretoria denied. The Kyiv government, however, still hopes to build a stronger relationship with South Africa. In June, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa led a team of African leaders on a peace mission to Moscow and Kyiv. Naledi Pandor, South Africa's international relations minister, says on that trip, Ramaphosa formed a good relationship with Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky. She spoke to journalists after meeting with Ukraine's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Dmytro Kubela, in Pretoria.
We confirmed that officials from South Africa have been playing a positive role in the discussions on the Ukraine peace formula, which is a set of proposed outcomes that Ukraine has put forward as relevant to achieving a lasting peace.
In May, Zelensky presented his formula for peace, which included a list of 10 non-negotiable conditions. These include the immediate withdrawal from Ukraine of all Russian troops, something Russia's President Vladimir Putin has said will never happen. Kubela described his talks on Monday with Pandor as wide-ranging, in-depth, and excellent.
Today, Ukraine and South Africa opened a new chapter in their relationship, one based on our shared aspirations for peace, security, and prosperity. Presidents Zelensky and Ramaphosa have given our bilateral relations a significant boost this year, and today we discussed how to maintain that momentum.
Kubela said Kyiv is dedicated to strengthening ties with Africa, saying it's opening embassies across the continent.
Ukraine genuinely wants to contribute to the development and prosperity of African nations. Ukraine has always paid special attention to food security on the African continent, and President Zelensky's humanitarian program, Grain from Ukraine, aims to alleviate the negative consequences of Russian aggression on countries experiencing food shortages.
Grain prices worldwide have risen since the Russian invasion cut off most shipments from Ukraine, and international sanctions on Moscow made it difficult for Russia to export crops. Kubela said Ukraine's keen to invest in Africa, especially in agriculture, mining, mechanical engineering, and information technology.
The deeper our contacts will be, the higher the level of trust between our nations will be, which will allow us to address the most sensitive issues in the bilateral and global agenda, be it the implementation of Ukraine's peace formula, be it cooperation in international organizations or development of trade and involvement of Ukrainian expertise in digitalization of government services or in the production of agricultural food across Africa. All of this is...
Kubela described South Africa as a great power and said good relations between Pretoria and Kyiv could benefit the entire continent. Ukraine's President Zelensky said this week the conflict between Israel and Hamas has diverted attention from the war in Ukraine, and his government's working to make sure the world sees his government's efforts to oust Russian troops. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The Kenyan government says November 13th will be a public holiday so citizens can plant trees as part of an ambitious plan to grow 15 billion new trees by 2032. Environment Minister Soya Fantuya called it a hummingbird contribution day, with everyone pulling together to fight the climate change crisis. Kenya's current forest cover is about 7%, but the government has set aside more than $80 million for planting trees this fiscal year as it bids to push the figure to more than 10%. Climate change is worsening droughts in the Horn of Africa and East Africa, including Kenya, where rains have failed for 5 seasons in a row. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.